The week before, one participant complained, and I think the word is complained about Dave's Mars. And then, of course, this week, this Sunday, he was openly Martian because he was doing his Kill Bill impersonation. It was a particularly hilarious moment, and particularly I felt resonant about Jesus walking through the cloud going, hello, 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 while his spirit was slaying demons on all sides. And then I was also thinking about how my wife, Michelle, she felt a lot of irritation come up after the Saturday meditation. And she emailed John. Dave had mentioned it on Sunday that somebody had irritation come up. And he explained that as the mechanism, that when we're getting close to the truth, the false identity, the mechanism kicks in to try and prevent us from getting too close. So yeah, I haven't figured out how to put those things together, but I mean, irritation is the poor man's anger. Irritation is a kind of defense and, you know, tensing up and a little grumbly kind of thing, as opposed to Mars energy, which is, well, it's just pure destruction, really. It's the energy of war. And so, and currently we're in a climate of warfare. But it's covert warfare. There aren't bullets flying around the areas. There's doctors in white coats going, take this, it's for your own good. Trust me, I'm a doctor. It was really deeply sinister. Could hardly be more sinister. I mean, it's one thing if you've got some fucking Viking wants to split your skull open with an axe, at least you know what you're dealing with. You've got this, you know, soft-voiced, charismatic doctor who's telling you to trust the data and completely dismissing all of your reservations, even though you spent months researching it, that, you know, your mind is being raped as well as your body. So yeah, there's that kind of war is going on, and it's not a war that we can engage with directly, like Quentin Tarantino would do. You know, we're not going to bring a samurai sword to the doctor's office and cut his head off. I mean, I strongly advise against it. And this is particularly for John, because he is right in the thick of things there in the US, and even in the location he is in the US, there's been some key events there. And there probably will be uprisings and even civil war. And I don't want IT to be, running in the streets with a baseball bat and machete, because I think he's got more important things to do of his life force. And it wouldn't be a very good death, I don't think. It wouldn't really be martyrdom. One thing to die speaking your truth to Russell Brand. What would be the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is that Dave gets a slot on Russell Brand, and who knows what kind of forces and intelligences then become aware of Dave because of that. And what the consequences could be. So yeah, this is a war, but we can't fight it with guns or machetes, and we can't fight it with irritation. I mean, irritation is just absurd. And that's what Brian was talking about, that's the mechanism just trying to shut our life force down. It's got many tools in its toolbox besides irritation. But that's one of them. So how is it, you know, how do we, and this is the guy dance, right? So this is a very crucial question. How do we rise up? Not internally with the false identity, but I mean, I said this in a recent Stir event. Actually, I've been on my knees since I turned 40, supplicating God to save me, but that doesn't look like a man on his knees. As you can see, I'm not, you know, I'm a dancing fool, really. I'm always in action and always engaging in battle in one form or another, but internally, I'm in the position of surrender as much as I can be, surrender to the greater powers. And it's they that, and potentially, I don't want to commit hubris, but potentially they that move me. And if that's to pick up a sword figuratively and slay demons, well, hallelujah. I'm an Aries, so it just comes naturally to me, that kind of talk and that kind of energy. So yeah, how do we as men who are born to embody Martian energies, which include anger, rage, and destruction, as long as it's righteous and not self-righteous, how do we start to let those energies move us and move through us? It wouldn't be mostly overtly destructive, as in Dave's imitation of Jesus there, as wise as serpents, harmless as doves. But that energy is coming through us and moving us, and the effects of our actions can be destructive in all the right ways. Destroying, you know, those things that are not real, things that are just impediments to the flow of the life force. I'm not talking about demons, so I'll let Dave do that. It comes too easily to me, so I can't trust myself. Especially if we have Catholics present. Ex-Catholics. Yeah, so I'm living with my wife, obviously, and her irritation has affected me, and I even had a nightmare a few days ago, which I sent to Dave and a few other people, about the war between the sexes and how that was going to go not viral, I can't think of the phrase, but just exponentially accelerate in the coming times, so that partners were just killing each other everywhere. Man killing woman, woman killing man. I hope that's not literally true, but could be. But those energies, that fundamental incompatibility. What I learned in my marriage by bitter, difficult experience was that sex makes everything worse. Actually, we think it's going to make things better, and it does for a while. But all the unconscious patterns, and that includes all the ancestral tensions that get double when we meet a partner, because they have their ancestral tensions and then they lock together, they lock horns. But all of that unconscious stuff, it gets like psychedelics, it gets awoken, stirred up by sexual intimacy, because it's alchemical. So all that stuff's coming to the surface, and it's pushing through, the life force pushing through and out, and it's activating all the patterns of the false identity that have kept, tried to keep it down. And so it brings out up all of our worst shit. Yeah, so that was in my dream. And I think maybe that's the real war, is between the masculine and feminine energies, the war in heaven. On earth as it is in heaven, and it's within each of us, like trying to bring about a union that never came about. It goes back to the Garden of Eden, the original wound. The more that the earth society goes to war and to hell, the more imperative it becomes for us to connect to existence and commune, holy communion, you know, with our souls. Complete the marriage ceremony that was aborted, you know, a long, long time ago, because the snake got in between Eve's legs. So Adam's ding-a-ling couldn't get in there.
You know, you got me thinking about the sub-persona and like the identity, identitarian politics, collectivism, that kind of thing. And if these kind of sub-persona are not being integrated within what they should be integrated in. So the magnetic center of a person, an individual soul, and then they're seeking some kind of connection. And so you've got these little identities that are floating around connecting with all of the other little identities. And so the people are getting associated with looking for communion with their selves, but instead they're getting trapped in these kind of, oh, I'm a whatever particular branch of identity that they're getting attracted to. And so losing, the opportunity to connect oneself, that I think we all have the drive to, and instead, fracturing further their own selves by placing too much energy in that sort of false personality, which is then joining with all the other false personalities that think the same way, to the detriment of the individual. I guess that's the danger of the impulse to war if you're not integrated as well. So if your impulse to war, if your Martian energy is resonating out of balance, then you're going to get attracted to the wrong. You think you're in the right direction. You're feeling very motivated, etc. But is that something that's actually holy in the sense that it's whole, or is it a fractured cause?
The Tikkun Olam that Dave spoke about is about the sparks coming together. If those sparks have covering, if they have these sub-persona and these false identities, that the movement towards union, as the sparks coming together, is a movement towards war, because the closer the sparks get together, the more those sub-personae get activated. And well, whatever they do, even if they were down with the union and were trying to make it happen, they wouldn't fit. They just don't fit together. But generally, they're probably not down with it. They're doing everything they can to prevent it. So the closer we get together, the more that stuff comes up, and the more volatile the situation becomes.
Yeah, in Islam they have this very war oriented language, and so they talk about the war on the nafs, or the lower self, which is the greater jihad, the lesser jihad being war on the unbelievers or whatever, but the greater jihad, like war on the self, which is brutal. I much prefer the kind of a softer language of making friends with yourself, or trying to integrate things rather than chopping off the hand that doesn't sort of behave properly.
Well, sure, and we live in a culture that abhors violence while turning it into entertainment and everything else. So we were pretty conflicted and confused around it, I think. Because you can't survive without committing violence unless you live in a world of convenience that does the violence for you. And we do, including cutting down trees and stuff as violence also. Dave cites the Bhagavad Gita quite often. Considering he doesn't cite the books hardly at all, he cites that one, in which Arjuna has to go to war and, kill his own relatives because some of them are on the other side of the conflict. And he's being, reassured that those are just bodies, identities, that the spirits have a totally different perspective, and that's something that I was trying to articulate recently or feel into, because my sense, and also when Brian was asking about the 144,000, my sense is that, rightly or wrongly, is that if there is going to be some kind of tikkun olam, a unification, a union, communion of the souls in the human energy field, it's only going to be possible if there's a massive death event. Billions of people die. I've always felt that, since my 20s anyway. And I've always had difficulty talking about it. And just today I was thinking that part of the problem has always been is that when I think about that, some part of me, it feels like some part of me kind of wants it to happen. And oh God, what's wrong with me? I'm some kind of ghoul. So I better not talk about it at all because I've got that in me. But if that is the restoration of the human energy field, why shouldn't I want it to happen? And why wouldn't it be a glorious happening? Like, is it just the false identity that thinks that that would somehow be terrible? And oh, think of the people. So it reminds me a bit of the Sandy Hook thing when that happened, and then some researchers discovered so many anomalies that they ended up coining the term crisis actor, and they're suggesting that the whole thing was staged. And, you know, respectable researchers, they don't go near it because it's too volatile or it's too, you know, inflammatory, but they acknowledge that, yeah, there's something fishy about the Sandy Hook shootings. And one of the objections to it might seem like a weird digression, but one of the objections, or the main objection was how could you say that? Think of the families of those victims. It was a total doublethink, because if you're saying that actually it was staged and acted, well, there were no victims. So the people who are objecting on those grounds, they didn't have a leg to stand on. I mean, you just got to look at the facts and, you know, is it real or isn't it? And you put sentimentality aside. It's not relevant. It's not even really realistic that we would grieve for strangers or feel bad for them. I mean, yes, there's compassion and empathy, but that's not a cognitive, you know, psychopaths have cognitive empathy. Autists have affective empathy. They feel it in their body. They don't know what it is cognitively, and they don't know how to express, oh, I'm so sorry, here's a tissue. They don't do any of that stuff. But they feel, we feel it in our bodies if we're connected. But then we would know at a body level if anyone died at Sandy Hook, and we'd feel the corresponding empathy. And if they didn't, we wouldn't. But it wouldn't necessarily come up to the cognitive level so we could say. But our bodies know. And so I'd say it's similar here. I mean, whatever the divine plan is, if the human spirit prevails, well, that's it. That's the only thing that counts. I mean, the human race was never going to be around forever. I mean, I don't know who thought that. Some people say Hollywood will always be here. You know, some people don't even can't think past 100 years. They probably don't say that now with Netflix. But yeah, I mean, this is just, anyway, I think the general point was we've got this cultural conditioning which replaces real feelings with sentimental counterfeit of them. And we learn the doing of love or compassion and the language of it. But it's at the cost of the real direct experience of it.
A virtue signaling thing, really, isn't it? It's just showing to others that you're making the right signals to fit in with the social expectation.
Yeah, and all that leads to you've got to protect other people's feelings at any cost, and don't even speak the truth if it will hurt someone's feelings. Don't even say 2 + 2 = 4, because that's patriarchal oppression right there. Right? I mean, that's how far it's gone, literally. It's the end of engineering, which might not be a bad thing. So around violence and destruction, we don't have the faculties with our false identity to understand it. we just say, oh, that's so terrible. So I have that thing in me, and it's crippling, actually. But I also have a thing in me which is, you know, identified with Lucifer and the angel of vengeance and the apocalypse. And so I've got to be careful. So, you know, I can pull over to the other side as well. And actually, there is a part of me that wants bad things to happen because they're bad, not because they're actually really good. We have that part in us too. So I mean, you just let go and let God, really. But as I said, Brian, I mean, for me, there are certain things that I really try to understand. I was given the kind of mind that is compatible with my soul, or vice versa. Like I have been able to pull things down and put them into words. And so for me, 144,000 relates to that. Well, I can see how a few souls might be able to stay in their bodies and actually encompass the reality of what's going on and not check out, not flip out and say, I'd rather be dead, thanks very much. A few, maybe. But, I mean, of course, I haven't met 8 billion, so I just base it on, you know, what gets lots of hits and what the general tide of the, what the general consensus seems to be, which is, seems to be, tell me what to do, even if it kills me, and I'll do it. That seems to be the general consensus now. As long as you tell me what to do, I don't care if it kills me. I'll do it. Because freedom is too frightening. Freedom and divine, you know, ultimate responsibility. You know, most of us, I mean, here today, as in when Dave's group, most of us are having trouble just stopping a few bad habits. And we might be the creme de la creme. And Dave has picked us out or somehow brought us in. So see how hard it is even for us to say no to a satanic system that wants our blood. Thanks, but no thanks.
I was just saying, I got mildly triggered during, I think it was Friday, Dave was talking about how Buddhism was the same as Hinduism in some key respect. And I threw my hands up in the air. I was aghast at this concept. So I pulled together what I thought to be some choice tidbits of Buddhist scripture, sent it through to Dave in a proud email, like, hey, you've trodden on my corns. He was like, no, I'm not having any of that. But I found it interesting because it to me, like I still look at it and I think I cannot see any difference between that the particular passage and how Dave had elucidated what he thought to be his experience of enlightenment. And it, to me, it was like word for word, amazing. But yeah, and he was like, no, just very, very, very disparaging. So it's a little wounded.
So those are two things. One is Buddhism compared to Hinduism, which Dave did and you didn't like that. And the other is you comparing a Buddhist account to Dave's account and Dave didn't like that, right? Tit for tat.
Yes, you know, I just really didn't like it. He was just like, who writes this? Who comes up with this garbage? You know? I might share it on the forum because I think it's a nice passage. You'll see what everyone else thinks.
Well, but you know Dave well enough, don't you, to know that he will shoot down all your sacred cows and make hamburgers out of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eat them in front of you.
That's my wounding is at a humorous surface level. I'm not too attached to it, but nonetheless, yeah.
Well, yeah, some people seriously get bent out of shape. I mean, myself included. Everyone goes through it at some point or another. I'm glad to say I haven't gone through it for years now with Dave, or a couple of years maybe. Last time was when he questioned my cojones in front of a group. But I wasn't there. That was the problem. I'd been there. I'd been fine. But I happened to overhear it. I shouldn't have been listening. But anyway, I was listening to somebody recently who I mentioned today as well, who was complaining about Dave's Mars. And generally, she just didn't like the stuff he was talking about, and it was too obscene and crude and whatnot. And it reminded me of actually, my wife did a comic strip of this thing that Dave talked about one time. He said that he described himself as a prison guard in a prison. He was in disguise as a prison guard because his plan was to you know, engineer a prison break for certain prisoners. And so he kept meeting with the prisoners and saying, you know, we're going to go out tonight at midnight and stuff, and trying to plan the break with them. But part of his undercover was he would have to serve them porridge and whatnot. So he looked like a real prison guard. And all the prisoners would ever say to him were things like, could I have more jam on my porridge, please? My bed's really uncomfortable. I think I need a new pillow. Right? Nobody was interested in the prison break. They just wanted better conditions. Yeah. That's what it reminds me of. But I mean, there's more variables there, because actually Dave not putting jam on our porridge and not giving us the nice tasty treats that we want is part of the way that he's trying to set us free. Because when we see that we have these points to defend, those are the things that prevent us from being free. So I would guess, Oliver, with your thing, that it wouldn't even really matter how close the account was to his experience, just the fact that you were referring to it and had it as a prop in your bag, right, in your kit. Sorry, gotta go.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Did you want to vocalize it?
Yeah, it's just stupid me, really. It's so obvious. I say this to introduce it, not that it can be done, it's complicated to do, probably, but it's taken me it's almost like having to win the lottery to work out such a simple thing to do in water. I've joined a spa, but there's two of them equidistant from my house. So although it's quite far, both spas are unique. And they both have water that's not too hot. One spa has a like a jacuzzi area. Okay, there's chlorine involved. A jacuzzi area where you sit in the spa with lots of jets, and the other health club has a smaller spa, same temperature without the heaviness of the chlorine. But what I've learned is I think it's like a float tank temperature, so it's skin temperature, so it's probably about 33.5 degrees. So you don't notice it that it's hot or cold. And there's a posture you can do in the water, but you can't do this in the bath and you can't do this in the swimming pool. You probably can do it on a hot beach by the sea, but you need it where the sea has got barriers. So it's like a swimming pool with seawater. Obvious for beaches to do. They do a few in England. I don't know why they're more popular, but you're in this water and you're kneeling and your back's straight and you're on your toes and your knees. So it's kind of a yoga position, but it's not strenuous. And your chest and your back is just supported with the breathing, and it's very, very healing. But the problem, what it does, it's like the film with Christopher Walken in called Dead Zone. I think the more you do, and it's the same with the flotation tank or lying down, the more you do, the darker it probably gets, and you're opening up older situations or events from different lives, because it seems to be going that direction. And I always found that the more healing one does, the darkness gets opened up, like you've just survived a car accident. It almost like opens them up. So probably that's probably why it's not welcomed or discovered by many people, because it's probably a dark way of healing. It's very different to using gravity and passive stretching and other types of movements. When it's in the water, something else is happening. You're being supported by water, and it creates a trance. I don't know what else really does that doesn't ask for something back, or does it? Like if you drink a lot, it's asking for something back. There's a contract. It's taking your kidneys. So this posture that I mean, it's not my posture. It's just kneeling. You're only on your hands and knees, but it's like a prayer pose. It doesn't matter where your arms are. Your arms can be folded up or buoyant in the water, but it does open up the heart, I suppose. It's the heart chakra that's opening up, and you're opening up with breathing. You're not having to sing or compress anything. And the body's naturally still in that posture. Not much effort is going on. And the back of your head and your neck is connected to the orbits. But whether that can be done in the warm sea, I'm sure it can. Because it can be quite shallow. It's only when the sea gets deeper, it gets colder. But you can always have a wetsuit on or something, or maybe they might invent something a bit warmer for us to wear when we go into the water, like some solar powered type wetsuits or something.
Something that has come to my attention recently is the three brain theory, that the the gut, the heart and the mind share a sort of a neural pathway, which is absolutely fascinating, and that your blood moves around your system. It's not only the heart. The heart isn't just a pump pushing your blood through the system. I think is the hemoglobin has some kind of electromagnetic force, which is pulling it around your body as well. So the heart is only part a pump, and it's much more than that. And the way it's, I'm looking into it to learn more now, just as things come to you, you know, via the internet, just some fascinating information is coming my way. And in consequence to that, once a month, I do a drawing, which I just sort of kind of let it come like a mandala. And the one I created this month was just all around. It's not the shape of a heart, but it is a heart. The heart's the well of the being. The inside it is the fire, but beneath it is the well. So this is just all stuff I'm intuiting. I have no actual reason for saying any of it. it's just pouring in. I just want to get it out. I needed to say it. I think the fire is important. And obviously, it's probably because there are so many issues with the heart at the moment in the news, in alternative media, in mainstream media. I've noticed that there is talk, much more talk of children having heart attacks. It's seen in the mainstream media. I think it's kind of being normalized. The idea that children have heart attacks too. Yeah. Do they, you know? And so let's look at it in this way. Maybe, you know, with people dropping dead and having long-term problems with their heart, this is the heart of humanity that's under attack. It's maybe very, very relevant that it's within the human social sphere across the whole globe at the moment, because maybe it is. Maybe we're actually having that heart attack right now, and as humanity.
Well, I also want to come back to what Mark was saying, because I think it's true that the closer we get to healing, the darker it can seem to get. Now, I think that it's not only that, and maybe the operative word is seem, that it seems to get darker. But I do think that whatever it is, whether it's just this appearance or whether it really does get darker and darker, many people turn away. They start to heal, and then it gets too frightening, it gets too intense, and then they go back to the drugs or the TV or the sex or the addiction or whatever it is, the unawareness, the unconsciousness. And I think that that's also what I say I think, but maybe it isn't a thinking thing, but I sense that that's what's happening collectively. It's this opportunity for a healing, and there is a crisis. It is a healing crisis, but that it's many people are choosing unconsciousness, and if you choose unconsciousness when your house is on fire, then you burn. That happened in London, right? All these people in this tower, and the firemen came and said, don't leave your apartments, it's fine, and they stayed and they burnt to death because they were unconscious, right? they didn't listen to their instincts. They didn't even hear their instincts. They just heard the voice of authority.
And that's a little bit related to what I do, Jason, as part of my day-to-day job. And it's called a stay put policy. And certain residential buildings, the idea is that you stay inside your unit, yeah, because it's the safest place to be. And in a lot of cases, it is the safest place to be because theoretically the fire should go out before or someone can get there to put the fire out before you're harmed, which is a lot safer than other. But it is dubious. It is a dubious policy, I think, the stay put policy. And it's interesting because a lot of the sky rises and the units and the flats that have been built, they're not compartmented units. There's intrusions into them where the fire can get in and spread, hence the whole cladding issue and everything. But it is really, it's your analogy of 2017, Glenfeld, and 2016, your analogy is quite appropriate in terms of how things are at the moment, because if the system wasn't defective, being told to stay put may well be a good idea, but because there's defects within it, it's a bad idea and it's not working. Stay put policy, it can save lives, but invariably if the system around it is incorrect, then it can destroy them as well.
Like vaccines, they can save lives if the system is a good one. So yeah, it's been a bit sobering. It continues to be sobering. It's a word for Yari. Making sober. It's like an awakening experience to be reminded of what it's like for individuals, what's happening currently. Because the way I see it, people are lining up like lemmings, if lemmings really did that, which they don't. It's a false, fake news. Apparently lemmings don't commit suicide, but human beings are being the lemmings that lemmings never were, apparently, and they're lining up for the slaughter with a conscious rationale that they're doing what's necessary to protect themselves, to be safe, and to make it safe for others. And my view is just that collectively human beings are committing suicide because it's too difficult to face up to the truths of our lives. But it's one thing to have that as a general sort of perspective, as I have for my whole life. I've had that bleak view of humankind, and it's quite another to really see it unfolding and then to be communicating with people who seem to be taking that path, and they're people that I care about, that I love, and even that I respect. And so I can't possibly just look at it in that abstract philosophical way as they're choosing to destroy themselves, that's their business. I feel I have to do something to intervene, but it's unwelcome. It's unwelcome often. People are choosing that course, and I enacted it with my brother. I literally enacted it because he slept with a loaded gun beside his bed, and he did heroin to the point, of risking his life and eventually killing himself. And there was very little I could say except I love you and I want you to stick around, but I have to respect your choice. Although I wonder now, I mean, how the hell do you respect someone's choice? I mean, I had to respect his freedom, because there was nothing I could do anyway. Anyway, that makes it perhaps harder because it triggers up, all the associations of trying to save somebody that I love and not being able to do it. And he even had a philosophy of suicide. His philosophy was, when you're up against the firing squad, give the order. But essentially, he was afraid of facing the truth, just like my mother and just like my father. And just like just about everyone on this planet. So I think, well, I know that courage is the most essential virtue now. I feel that. And I even feel it's sort of here with us today. How did it turn out to be a men's meet? I don't know, it did. And Yari came into our midst with a hot issue, and it felt, or it feels to me, that there is sticky stuff here today, that we're pushing through it. Having to increase our spin, the spin of our electrons, to cast off the black gunk that keeps wanting to envelop us.
It almost sounded like a graphene reference. Perhaps it's a good symbolic representation. The black gunk.
The kids all brought us flowers when we got out of bed. They were wearing white linen, garlands covered their heads. We breakfasted in the orchard. There were doves all around. And Francesca, she lay among the leaves and dew on the ground. She would look up at no one. She would not make a sound. The staff tried to act like everything was fine, said she was just totally wild. Frittatas, a worried murmuring began. The dog walked around, sniffing her hair, and licked her unmoving hand. Andre crouched down beside her, he put his hand on her head. She reached up and she slapped it away, so we knew she wasn't dead. In all the commotion, our chance to get away came. We ran off through the trees hand in hand with our stolen champagne.
But not ever. This is one of the things I have a small issue with, is that I think that if you peel away the surface, it's really easy to tar everyone. We sit here and the collective outside in the world, and tarring them all with the same brush. There's many people you meet who you will assume are a certain way, and they're probably sitting down in an affinity group somewhere, yeah, having very similar conversations, but based on their dialectic and based on their relationship with the world. And I think it's becoming quite difficult. It's becoming really easy to tar everyone with a single brush just because they might watch more Netflix than you, or they may eat more cake than you, or drink more alcohol than you. I do it, get it. But again, I think that the crisis, where is that crisis? You know, what does it take to shake someone out of the trance, the consensus trance? What does it, because it's in within everyone to come out of that trance. And it's not their fault for the way they look, the way they act. It's not their fault because of the way they act or what they do, because it's not obvious that someone is sort of has the seed of enlightenment within them. You may well discount that and judge them for it. So it's just not obvious. That's it now. It's not obvious, but it's there, and everyone has it. So, and that's, you can hear Otis snoring, no doubt. Sorry if it's scary.
I thought you were trying to wake up Otis a moment ago there, Sim.
Yeah.
But it was humanity. Otis represents humanity currently in Sim's world.
I'm going to use that tar brush. He may well represent humanity better than a lot of humans do.
It's a good one for me to remember, try to anyways, that acceptance doesn't always equate to approval, or a lot of times, or maybe even most of the time, but when it comes to what people are doing and how they're acting and what I think that they should think and how I think that they should act, and a lot of times I try and assert some control by being disapproving, like, or it's almost like something inside me feels like, no, don't be accepting. That's not the way. You need to somehow show that you don't approve or that you disagree. That's the twisted, compassionate thing to do because it's more honest. It's just, there's a lot of opportunity to see that coming up with me over and over these days in different interactions with people. Then it'll come full circle, and then I'll just be like, well, then just don't interact with anybody. That's the solution. Just avoid people, unless they're people that you know, see eye to eye with on the important stuff.
Well, you know, in video games, even the non-player characters have important information. So you really have to check in with every consciousness that comes your way and see what they've got to offer. And if you end up thinking, well, whatever you end up thinking, I don't necessarily want to articulate it. The other thing that occurs to me when you're showing that, Jeff, is that we have this whole counterfeit ideology of tolerance now, because tolerance is the supreme virtue and judgment is the supreme sin, right? That's the only thing that you're allowed to judge people for, is for judging. right? Thou shalt not judge is the new first commandment. So then because of that, it's hard to find real acceptance. Tolerance is like the phony substitute or surrogate for acceptance. They're not the same. I mean, who wants to be tolerated? Right? That's what you do with kids or annoying dogs, right? Or hemorrhoids. You know, you just tolerate them. And then the last thing that was occurring to me, because we must all have this, or at least present company, maybe everybody. Remembering something my brother said there, that it might help to imagine that each of us have 8 billion sub-personalities, and we don't like most of them. Precisely because they're sub-personalities, and, you know, so they're not integrated, they're not whole, and they're not serving the interests of the whole psyche and the whole body because they've got their own agendas. But if any of you have ever had to wrestle, and I assume all of you had to wrestle with some of those sub-personalities that want to do things that your superego says, no, you shouldn't do, maybe because you actually also know, your body knows that it's not a good idea, but that the superego coming in and saying, you worthless little worm, get in line and do what you're told, doesn't work. I mean, this is back to Yari's thing of addiction, not that it's only Yari's, but I mean, he brought it here today somewhat. It doesn't work to just say drinking is wrong and I'm bad if I do it. And that can feed the addiction. Well, Jeff could certainly testify to this. But nor does it work to just say, oh, well, do what you want. You know, I'll just drink all I want. There's some sort of middle way where you have to accept that part of you that wants to do stupid shit. Accept it. But don't approve of it. As Jeff's saying, you can't approve of it, because if you give it approval and validation, then you're not being honest with it or with yourself. Like if you tell yourself it's okay to drink alcohol and smoke and go to porn websites and that it doesn't do any harm, then that's just not true. It does. But so that kind of acceptance, I almost said tolerance there, but I saw it coming, the fake word, that kind of acceptance, I would say as within, so without. Like we can look at other humans, and as we look at our sub-personalities, well, you know, they're dysfunctional and they're fucked up and they're really annoying and all the rest of it, but they know not what they do. Right? They're only that way because they're fragmented through trauma. And I mean, I don't believe any of my sub-personalities, and I don't believe anyone out there. So if I'm accepting the bullshit of other humans around me, it's because I know that that behind the bullshit is life, and that's what I want to connect to. But I don't want to engage with the bullshit. So I might chop off the heads of demons. You know, I might be thoroughly and utterly intolerant, as long as it isn't coming from what Jeff was talking about and Sim was talking about. There's a part in us that wants to just tar and feather everybody so that we can raise ourselves up to the position of the emperor of the north, in my case. So, yeah, I mean, it is one energy field. It is one field of consciousness. And it may be that human beings as individuals don't really exist anyway. So what would we be judging or tolerating in that regard? We would be distracted by epiphenomena instead of tuning into what the reality. Tulpas, right? People, fragmented people, traumatized people, they create images of themselves, and then they, like my brother did, and then they project those images into the world, and that's what the world becomes. It's just a realm of these holographic images that have no substance, a simulation. And I do think that is all of us. I mean, that's the thing I remember, that I might be several inches taller than anyone here tonight, but that hardly means that I'm closer to the sun, because, you know, 93 million miles, right? A couple of inches doesn't make much difference. So in terms of our level of delusion and being cut off from the source.
It does if you're working out vaccine efficacy.
Is that right? A couple of inches? Yeah.
Well.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
A couple of decimal points, I think.
Yes, so in terms of accurate representation of reality, it's very important to recognize we have different levels of awareness to those around us. But in terms of, well, I'm better than this person, as Sim was saying, because et cetera, et cetera, it might be the difference of a couple of inches in our 93 million miles. We don't really know how far we are from wholeness.
Or really how far we are from the sun.
Well, that's true too. It might be 500 yards away, but really yeah, small.
I think it's probably closer to that. But what you were saying about the like the tulpas and stuff, it made me think of, like, it's like the uncanny valley of energy, because it's not like an appearance thing, but it's like. Like I can deal with an annoying personality, or, you know, an abrasive, whatever, people that are just different, whatever it is. But now it seems like it's to the point, it's like of this anti-human and like energy force being just moving through people. And it's like, it's beyond, it's much more noticeable and much more just like aggressive, and it really throws me off.
It occurred to me, I was just thinking about if a human being can have a certain amount of fractured personalities, MK Ultra style, I think it's, was it 22 or something? Yeah, it's 20s. Could humanity as a community, as a human consciousness, could we have got to a point where our population growth, say, greater than 6.5 billion, that's, you know, as many individual humans within the consciousness field, within the, human field, human energy field. Is there actually a limit on bodies within the human energy field? And have we overstepped those bodies? Hence, we're seeing the praxis unfold. Just something that occurred to me, maybe that there is a reason, another reason why we are acting in the ways that we're acting, because we are one field, but allowed to be, have a certain amount of individuals within that field, but we've overgone that number, whatever that number is.
144,000. Yay. That's the sorcerer's revelation, Sim. I'm glad that somebody else finally arrived at it because I thought I was all alone out here.
And that's a sacred number as well, I believe, isn't it? A reoccurring sacred number in geometry. And
well, geometry is where I was going to go with that. Of course, I don't know the numbers or anything like that, and this is really intuitive, but the idea that the human, the field of the energy field of human consciousness or the collective human soul is finite, and that it is portioned out among the bodies that incarnate. That's the basic idea. And so the more bodies there are, the more it's like butter on bread, you know, the more thinly the consciousness is distributed. And the more difficult it becomes for that consciousness to organize and coordinate itself. Just as if you had 8 billion points, it would be very difficult to create a geometrical form, probably impossible. Whereas, well, if you had 12, it would be very easy. And then if you had 12 times 12, it would still be easy. I don't know about 12 times 12,000. That's why I say I don't, you know, I'm not an autistic genius of that kind, of the mathematical kind. But at least I can sort of get my head around a number like 144,000.
That then leads to a spatial reasoning as to how many of those fields can the Earth contain. Maybe the Earth can contain 144 of those fields. I think there's the idea of the box saga, which is the civilization that was apparently existed around the original North Pole, which is again I think somewhere in Finland, isn't it? They built their communities in gigantic circles that touched each other, and so you could only have a certain amount of people within those geographical areas. That's the idea as part of their philosophy. I don't understand it all completely. It's quite fascinating, and it's a tradition that's been lost, and stories that are being lost because it's an oral tradition. It's quite fascinating that there are people who are trying to excavate the original North Pole that's in Finland. I can't remember. It's Helsinki. It's in Helsinki, I think. So is there actually space to contain groups of the 144,000 if that is an idealized consciousness field? Maybe.
Well, yeah, very interesting. What's in Helsinki? The North Pole or something?
The original North Pole. I think there's a museum there. And it's where, you know, the point where the North Pole was before the Earth was on the oblique axis.
Is that why Helsinki is shortened to hell, I wonder?
Well, hell is hull, yeah, I think.
Hell is hull?
H-O-L-E.
H-O-L-E, hull.
Yeah.
I thought you said Hull, which is where I'm from.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, they're all, quite possibly.
Hele, that, whatever that, the origin of that Greek, I suppose, Hele, it has the same root as heal, which is back to Marx's point about healing is going ever into darker places.
Is it also about obeying, you know, to heal?
That I don't know, but I was saying heal, H-E-A-L, even though hell was spelled H-E-L-E. You have to ask Otis about the other kind of heal, which is also Achilles' heel, which needs to be healed.
You brought our dream journals. We did terrible things. At the moment the sun broke through the clouds, we both started to sing. In that cool wooded hollow, on a carpet of moss, for the last time, illuminate yourself. For the last time, for the last time, illuminate yourself. For the last time.